Grant serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to make the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody will chat with you. Anybody in their first 30 days? All right. Is anybody visiting from out of town or new to the meeting?
Hey, alcohol in Buffalo.
Thanks, Kirk. I'm not Paul. It's my first time this meeting.
Welcome, Kirk.
Hey, Kirk.
Welcome. Anybody else? Sweet. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is the foreword to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are going to be discussing step one, part two. Please welcome our panel this evening. We've got Anna and Travis. All right, I'm going to read the first paragraph on page five. And then Travis, Anna has selected you to go first. So you're going to kick it off and then push it back this way. All right. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. All right, it's on page five. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder if such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed, and the confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day, I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Travis.
I did. My name is Travis. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here. Grateful to be sober today. Grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a home group member here. We meet every Monday at 7 p.m. You can usually find me here at 6:30. I've been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I take other men through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was explained to me, that's the ticket here, you know, to help others. And so, what we're talking about here is a perfect sort of segue into like what's the problem? The problem is that it centers in my mind, and I can't really fix my mind with my mind. Right. So, I've I always laughed at this too. It was like shortly afterward, I came home drunk. I think it's so funny because I think it's funny because I've experienced it, you know? Now normal people will probably, you know, look at me crazy. But I just think it's so funny, because it's true. And, you know, I'm always looking for my high resolve. I'm always, you know, wondering, what the hell is wrong with me? I'm constantly, you know, my confidence is constantly over. It's overcorrected, you know. It's always replaced by cocksureness because I don't really think that the problem. When I got to you guys, I was 24 years old, and at that time in my life, I had some more things to lose. You know what I'm saying? But I wasn't willing to admit that that I had this thing. And why is that? I don't know. I guess I just couldn't see it. Maybe I was just, I don't know. Maybe it's just my alcoholism, you know, using itself against me, but, or it's just defiance or I was delusional. I don't know. Or I was just sick or all the above, but the problem centers in my mind rather than in the body. And, you know, I'm constantly looking for, managing better next time, you know, I might as well just get good and drunk. You know, I'm constantly doing that thing over and over and over again, wash, rinse and repeat. I mean, I've been kicked out of so many bars. I've been thrown out of so many houses. I've couch surfed all over the place. And everyone is wondering the same thing that I'm wondering, like, what's wrong with me? I mean, I'm flying on planes to another state because, you know, the other state's the problem, you know, going back for her because she's the one that's going to fix me kind of thing, you know. But I did that thing. I wash, rinse, and repeat over and over and over again. What I didn't understand was what was explained to me was that I have my illness, you know, is, I say my illness, like you hear the selfishness in that, right? It's like the illness as alcoholism sees it, as I see that Alcoholics Anonymous sees it, is threefold. We talked a little bit about that last week. I have a problem with when I ingest alcohol. When I take a drink of alcohol, this isn't alcohol, it's coffee, by the way. When I take a drink of alcohol, something happens within me that doesn't happen in the other 9 out of 10 people that drink. The other 9 out of 10 people, some of them are hard drinkers. Some of them are just temperate drinkers. Some of them can take it or leave it alone. Some of them can stop or moderate. And then there's the 1 out of 10. That's me. I'm the real alcoholic. When I take a drink of alcohol, the drink takes me. And I physically can't stop. I don't have the off switch. But then the flip side to that is that when I'm physically abstinent from alcohol for a certain period of time, I have a very uncomfortable sober problem. I can't stand the way it feels to be physically sober around you guys, because you're not treating me right, you're not fair, I'm not getting paid enough, you know, she needs to straighten up, all these things that are constantly cycling through my head, keeping me up at night, you know. And that's the stuff that's swirling around my head constantly. It never stops. And the only thing that takes that away is taking a drink of alcohol, which ends up putting me on another bender because I can't stop drinking once I start. So it's just this never ending vicious cycle that goes wash, rinse and repeat over and over and over again. And that had to be explained to me. And then I had to go experience it a lot more. And then it had to be re-explained to me again. And then I had to go experience it again. I did that a lot, you know, I did it a lot. And I'm not remissed by it. Honestly, I think it needed to happen in my experience. But I think that's all I want to talk about for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Rob. Hey, everyone, I'm Anna. I'm an alcoholic.
Anna.
And I am really honored and humbled to have been asked to come speak here tonight, especially with Travis. I just related a lot to what he said. I always say to sponsees when I share my story, if you relate to me in any way, that's bad news. And I related it to Travis, so I guess that's bad news for me. So if you're relating to any of this, you're in the right place, and that's good news. So if you don't know me, I have a sponsor. And she has a sponsor and so on and so forth. And I'm one of those spoiled ones that I've had the same sponsor for the entirety of my sobriety. And we talk frequently, that poor woman. And I learned a long time ago not to lie to her because that would defeat the purpose. My home group is the Half Measures group in Virginia Beach on Tuesday nights at 7:30, 717 Tucson. Come check us out. And I'm grateful that I've gotten to do a lot of service in this program in a lot of different capacities over the years. And this is my least favorite type. So thanks for having me. And when I was asked to speak and I asked what the topic was, they said mental obsession. I said, great, I am an expert on that. I can speak all day on mental obsession. And I really do love the paragraphs that were chosen. When I was first going through the big book with my sponsor, and I mean, she started me on the blank pages, and my first homework assignment was the doctor's opinion and then right into Bill's story. She had me make it very personal. She said, look for yourself in these pages. Look for not necessarily the specifics, but for the feelings, the thinking, and the behaviors. And I had been a chronic relapser for years. And I had a lot of shame about that. And when I came back, I really did not believe that Alcoholics Anonymous was going to work for me. I was too broken. I was terminally unique. And I'm grateful for the gift of desperation that, you know, my higher power literally brought me back. I did not bring me back for one last shot. And that desperation and me beat me into a state of reasonableness that when she gave me a suggestion, I now know that my higher power gave me the willingness, because I really don't think I had it of my own volition to take her suggestions. So I did. I looked for myself in these pages. And these paragraphs, it's like I had sat in big book meetings before. They snuck these in. I suddenly was relating to this. It was like, this is me. This is what I had been living, this nightmare of relapse for years. And that I could not explain, you know, why this is what I had been doing for so long. And it's important. And I love how it was phrased, that second part of the first step. If the phenomenon of craving, if the physical aspect of this disease was my only problem, then my first rehab would have worked. The first time I detoxed would have worked if that was the only problem. You know, I could admit that I was powerless over alcohol when I was 16. You know, put one drink in my body, all bets are off. I was blacking out young, you know, 0 to 100. I genuinely believe I was born with this thing. The second part of it is I couldn't stay stopped. And I love what Travis shared. That was the thing. When I stopped drinking, I got worse. And I couldn't stand being sober, you know, and when I came in the rooms, I never did anything y'all told me, you know, the spiritual aspect of it didn't change. And so everything in these couple of paragraphs, you know, I would make the sweet promises, and my poor family, you know, my family happily observed, this time I meant business. And I did. You know, and they went on this nightmare ride with me. You know, we talk about this being a family disease. And I would sit there, and I remember reading this when I was new again. There had been no fight. And I had those relapses where I didn't mean to drink. I honestly didn't. You know, and there were a couple of times I had a couple of months, you know, and I just went somewhere I wasn't supposed to. And someone would push a drink my way. And I'd be sitting there the next day, just like Bill, beating on the bar. How did this happen again? How did this happen again? And I was as baffled as anyone else in my life, you know, and the places alcoholism took me, you know, were not normal, you know, and the people I was with, it was just like, you know, and I have written my book. Well, I might as well, we're already here. Screw it. Let's go ahead and get good and drunk. you know, that efforts would kick right in. And, you know, a little night bender would turn in my, my last relapse started just like that. Didn't mean a drink. Was one night, turned into a 1 year solid, did not take a sober breath, could not stop. That physical dependency kicked in. And I lost weeks of time. I couldn't tell you what day it was, you know, and I was just gone, you know, and it's a miracle I made it back. So I'll pause there and we'll hear the next reading.
Good. Thank you both. All right. Our next reading is going to be on page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other aspects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months on the goose hung, for three or four months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer. Self-knowledge. Rapids.
Yeah. Self-knowledge. That's the answer. Absolutely. That's the answer when I got here. That was the answer for the 8 years that I was in and out of here. That was the answer at whenever time, you know, somebody with one of these books in their hand would come approach me, you know, at an AA meeting, throughout those years. That was always my answer. There's a couple things that were pointed out to me in Bill's story is that this was one of really, like, I think 2 or 3 ways he's tried to stay sober. It's like self-knowledge. And then he talks about fear, I think, a little bit before this, actually. But, like, this idea that, well, we said the prayer right before we came up here, actually. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know. And why is that important? Currently, it's important because I have an ego that rebuilds itself, you know. But what we're talking about here is this idea that I can do the job myself. And that's always been the case. I'll just put on my bootstraps and put my work boots on, and I'm out the door, and I'm making it happen. You know, I've kind of always been that way. I was just born with that. I don't know. I remember growing up, I remember watching my mom drink, and it always baffled me by watching her drink or watching her come home drunk would drive me nuts. And I didn't know how someone could be like that. And then I ended up, like, with this thing, and looking back on it, I can totally relate and totally understand where she was at in that, at that time. And I don't know if this thing is, like, I'm born with it, or whether it was, you know, the genetic disposition that I had or whatever. I don't know. I don't really care anymore. But I do know that I have it. And it's got to be treated, because it's going to be treated one way or the other. You know, it's an itch that must be scratched. You know, alcoholism demands treatment. And I'm either going to treat it with drinking, or I'm going to treat it with, I've treated it with not drinking and not going to AA and not doing AA. And it hurt too much, to be totally honest. But I can also treat it with this program of action that we have available to us. And that's what I've been doing for the past 5 years. I had this underline in my book: my incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Now that's important. It took me coming in out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for all those years. You know, I'd come in, I wouldn't put money in the basket. I would leave 5 minutes early. I'd come 5 minutes late. I talked to the girls. I drank your coffee. I ate your donuts. They were terrible. But I just freaking, like, I just did that over and over again. And I always wondered why I didn't feel like other people looked, because I thought I'm doing AA. Like, this is AA. I'm going to AA meetings. Right? You should feel better. I mean, that's what I'm told to do. But this guy had to explain to me, sitting down knee to knee with me, reading this book line for line, word for word, page for page, and break this down to me because I didn't know. And I might have told you that I know, and I'm the guy that's like, I'm the yes man, you know, I'm the one that's gonna like shake my head at you and just let you know that I understand you when I really don't. But I remember sitting across the table from this guy, and he's breaking this down to me, and finally it just hit me. I was like, yeah, it's over, the jig is up, you know. I can't do this myself. You know, all these experiences sort of just came to me at once in that moment. And I realized for the first time that I was up against something I couldn't solve on myself. You know, there was just two doors. It was either die an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. And I can't live on a spiritual basis with what I think I know and treat this thing with my mind and self-knowledge. I just can't do it. Not only because it's in this book and proven experience with 164 pages plus all the stories, and there's a doctor's opinion that explains to me why I can't do the job myself, but because I've experienced it. And looking back on that just helps solidify this idea that like I have to do this thing with you guys, and I can't do it alone. We either get together get better together, or we die separately. That's been my experience. I've walked over bodies. I have three kids at home and I want them to have a dad. But I also have this beautiful fellowship and this program of action to do with you guys that I love doing. So that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Travis. Two thoughts I have with this particular paragraph in my experience of the relapsing. One of the erroneous beliefs I had was if I fix my outside, then I'll be better. And I'd get like a week and suddenly I'd have a lot of opinions. If I go get the job and make some money and, you know, tell everyone, I'm so sorry, I robbed you 6 days ago. And, you know, I get everything cleaned up, just get them off my back and like make a little life for myself. Then this alcohol problem, I'll work out more, I'll eat better, whatever. I'll find him. He'll fix me because I'm sick. Yeah. fix the outside, I'll be good. And I went to town regularly, even made a little money. You know, I know these things now. I've been to some meetings. I've been to one rehab, two rehab, three rehab, you know, and I've gotten some education. And I know, don't drink. It's bad. And I had some very extreme consequences from my drinking. So, you know, don't do that. Bad. Went to school. You know, I had a couple of big opportunities. Don't blow it. You know, and inevitably, I had the incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop over and over again. And no matter how many, and I kept doing it. I was, no matter how many times I relapsed and let me fix the outside, it just didn't fix the inside. And I have written my book. I'm glad I write things down because they say the memory comes back and it just don't. The reason, and this was explained to me, that self-knowledge does not work. It doesn't give me a solution. I can know all sorts of things, but it doesn't give me a solution. Like, great job. Like, okay, now I know why. Knowing why doesn't do anything for me. What am I going to do with that? There's no practical application of, I know why, but now what? There's no sufficient substitute. That's a sneak peek to the end of the book there. You know, how am I going to live? What am I going to do on a Tuesday? I'm going to wake up on a Tuesday. Fine. I know why I do what I do, but now what? How do I go about my day? Because of all this crazy talking to me in my brain, it's like, oh, great, you're up. We have plans. You know, like how do I shut that up? You know, there's no connection. Me and myself, by myself, that's not great company. self-knowledge is just that. It's just me and myself. And that's a lonely, isolating place to be. And what I have learned is that when I'm connected with you, when I'm connected with a higher power, I have a shot. With you, I get a solution. You show me the way. You show me what to do on a Tuesday. And a path to live. You know, that's, we've got what, 43 pages of first step, and the rest of the book gives me a solution beyond that. What's next? You know, so self-knowledge by itself keeps me stuck in this cycle of madness because I don't know what to do with that. So over to you.
Sweet. Thank y'all so much. All right. Next reading is going to be on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Travis.
So it was explained to me that it's choice and control, right? So what we're talking about here is choice. I can't choose when and when I'm not going to drink on my own. I just don't have the ability to do that. And I never have, even though I might have thought at a certain time that I did. It's just not true. I don't think I was ever making a choice. And that's a fact. That is the fact. My so-called willpower is practically non-existent, although it seems to be very well applied in a lot of other respects in my life. You know, I know how to show up and go to work. I mean, I might be drunk, but I'm going to work, you know. I know how to make money. I don't know. I just knew how to do a lot of other things. I don't know, keep a car, maybe keep it running, keep a house or a roof over my head, even if it was just a car or a bridge. But I mean, really, when we're talking about this, it's all it's telling me is that I just can't choose. I've lost that power. I've lost the power of choice. And I'll never regain that control of choice. It'll never re-enter into my brain and allow me to make willfully, you know, pick up the drink and put it down. It just won't happen. It's never going to. And I love how this, you know, the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. There were so many times where I would wake up and from a blackout. I'm always coming to, you know, I'm either coming to under a bridge or I'm at someone's house that I don't even know, or I'm waking up in a car that I was actually driving the night before. And the very next day or hours later, I'm doing it again. I'm the guy that leaves the hospital, you know, from serious complications, and I can't wait to go through that again. And not because I want to cause harm to others and myself, it's because I've lost the power of choice. You know, I'm the guy that's in the hospital having people bring it into me, you know, and that type of stuff you can fit in a small bag, but that's besides the point, right? It's like, it's easier to get away with in places like that. But I'm alcoholic through and through. I mean, I have a lot of drugs in myself. I did a lot of drugs in my time, for sure. But I am absolutely what they describe on page 21 of this book. I'm a real alcoholic through and through. And I always will be. I think anyone can, I wasn't going to say this, but I think I will. I think anyone can have the mental obsession by sniffing cocaine. anyway. You give my grandmother cocaine, she'll probably want it. Like, you know, I mean, it's going to happen. But the real alcoholic, he takes a drink, the drink takes him. Then the next day, what ends up happening is this recirculates through my brain. That feeling is going to overcome me until I can put it to my lips again. The first time I drank alcohol, it was a spiritual experience. I don't remember doing anything else except for drinking that night. And I left there feeling like I was on cloud nine. I was the handsomest guy. I was able to dance. There were singing lessons. It was awesome, right? That's what I'm trying to recapture every single time I drink, you know? And that old idea that there was this guy that explained to me, I used to love the way he explained this to me, but I still tell this to the guys that I sponsor. But imagine, like, you know, I'm physically as sober as I'm ever going to be right now, right? And I'm not doing this way of life. I'm just physically sober. And here, Travis, you know, if you want a drink. And what ends up happening is when I'm not engaged in this process, this way of life, the fun seems this big and the consequences are this big every single time. And then I take the drink and the consequences are this big and the fun is that big. And then all of a sudden I'm like pulling empty, you know, ATM receipts out of my pocket, insufficient funds. And I'm just, you know, peeking out the blinds in the middle of the night, you know, I mean, the birds are chirping. It's awful. No one wants anything to do with me. I'm that guy. But you guys welcome me back. And thank God for that. Thanks.
Thanks, Travis. Those chirping birds. God. Used to hate them. Now they're lovely. Okay. What a change. So the fact is that paragraph is in squiggles. I was told to pay attention to the squiggles anyway. They're called italics. Anyway. And I could really relate to having lost the power of choice and drink, you know, both physically and mentally. And I will say, I have to be that guy. My very favorite couple of sentences about the obsession is on the previous page, on page 23, where it says, therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. That felt like a death sentence. I was like, huh. And it says, and the truth, strange to say, is usually that he has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. And then it says, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. And like I said, in my first month or two coming back, reading that, it's like I'd never heard it before. And it gave me immense relief to see myself in those paragraphs, because suddenly it wasn't an Anna problem. If it was an Anna problem, it was unique to me and there is no solution. If it's an alcoholism problem and y'all have a solution, which apparently is Linux, you know, there's a chapter about that, then there was hope. There was hope, because here's a great big room of people, a whole fellowship of folks that were sober and happy about it. And I, at that moment, wasn't happy about it. But apparently, if I do what you did, I would get what you got, you know? And so I was one of the baffled ones. I could not understand how I could go back to something, how I could love something so much and obsess over something every minute, scheming, how am I going to get more? The great panic of running out. I'd have enough and I'd be already panicking about running out, you know, and how am I going to get more? Da, da, da. How I would want to go back to something that had so devastatingly destroyed my life over and over in new and in creative ways. And and that of my family. You know, by the end, I had been disowned by my family. I had lost a fiance. I had had every legal trouble. I had totaled cars. I had had alcohol poisoning. I can't tell you how many times I had literally died. Been left on the side of the road for dead. I had survived assaults. I had survived drug overdoses. I had been involved in organized crime. Had felony, you name it. I had been there. I had done that. There was no good medical reason for me breathing. And I still wanted more. And I couldn't understand it. And neither could anyone else who knew me, you know, and four treatment programs and just, you know, and I remember reading this and being like, talk about humiliation, you know, some of the dark, low places I had been, the suffering. And I, you know, walking back into a halfway house, you know, my nose bleeding and sweating and hadn't showered and just, you know, I had my all my everything I owned was in a hefty bag. You know, and my family was like, good luck, kiddo. Peace. You know, don't call. We changed the locks. It was the last time. And I hadn't been home in a long time. And I was sitting there relieved and like, what am I doing? And all I wanted was a drink, you know. And then reading these pages, it just the almost certain consequences. I wanted to escape. You know, I'd do anything for a drink. And I always go back to, and I know you all probably read this last week, but, you know, they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And my sponsor explained to me, your natural state sober is restless, irritable, and discontent. That's why, you know, and unless you can fix that with a psychic change, right, you're going to sit there obsessing about the ease and comfort which you think you're going to get by putting something in your body, right? And all of it, it's anti-anim medication, you know. And so the obsession was not so much for the drink, you know, the Jamesons, which, you know, was me. It was for escaping reality, change how I feel, get me out of right here, right now, get me out of this skin, get me out of this present moment because I can't stand being in it, you know. And so then it started to click. So y'all have this solution. What was that spiritual thing you were all talking about? Like, let me get some of that, you know. after how many years of relapsing, it started to be like, oh, so the main problem is in my mind. Okay. That's why I can't sleep at night because it won't shut up, you know. And, you know, that line in the doctor's opinion, now it made sense why some people made the ultimate sacrifice rather than continue to fight. You know, that made sense because it took me to that place too. So
thank you both. All right. Next reading is going to be on page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which in time led to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Travis.
Yeah, this first paragraph is what kept me from ever even doing this work. I was completely, utterly unwilling to admit that I was a real alcoholic. I was not going to admit that I'm sick bodily and mentally and that I'm different from everyone else. That sounds crazy to me. You know, I have a brother, non-alcoholic. We would go to the bar together or we would be drinking at somebody's house or whatever. And I would order a drink or have a drink and he would have a drink or order a drink. And he would do this crazy thing where he would start swirling it. You know, he might get up and go to the bathroom. You know, half an hour has gone by. The thing hasn't been drank. that sounds, that's crazy to me, but at the time, I don't understand that. Like, this is what they're talking like this idea that like, my entire, I don't usually like saying this, drinking career, it sounds like so professional, which I am these days, but I wasn't at that. My entire drinking career was based on that. Like, I can't stand the way it feels when I'm sober, right? Without a spiritual solution, I'm just coming apart at the seams, you know? I just can't stand the way it feels to be sober. And my mind is just running a million miles an hour. I can't sleep at night, all this kind of stuff. But the great obsession of my drinking is that I'm going to one day beat the game, that I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. I've controlled it and I've enjoyed it, but I've never had both at the same time, you know, because when I'm enjoying it, I'm not controlling it. When I'm controlling it, I'm not enjoying it. You've probably read that in the stories. If you have, if you haven't, go ahead and check that out. I forget which one it is, but do you remember?
No.
Doesn't matter. It's in there. But it's very true. When I read that for the first time, I was like, yep, that's me. And the persistence of this illusion is absolutely astonishing. I've walked over dead bodies watching this happen. In what I would suspect to be real alcoholics. And like Anna, same thing. I have no, I like how you said that. I have no medical reason to be alive today. No good explanation for me to have a heartbeat. So, you know, I'm here, and God has other plans, I guess. But this is where it says, like, this is the first step in recovery. I have to fully concede. That means, like, all the way. Like, you know, that means more than half, for sure. I have to fully concede. Like, that's a big word. It's not just, like, it sounds different than the first step, right? We had to admit we were real alcoholics, you know. Or we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, you know. Fully concede. That means, like, that's an inside job. That's, when I read that, that's, like, I have to literally be broken apart. Inside, be beaten into a state of reasonableness to really concede. This last paragraph we read, I was told to read this and replace the word control with choice. And I'm going to do it for you guys. Mm-hmm. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to choose our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers choice. All of us felt at some time that we were regaining choice, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less choice, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. So I will never regain that power of choice. That's why I work the steps. That's why I help others. That's why I write inventory. That's why I pray and meditate, you know? These are things that I'm not like running from the drink. I now want to do this thing, you know? In the beginning, I didn't want to do it, but I was told it doesn't matter as long as you do it. It's not a requirement. I didn't want to do it, you know? I was told to just do it. There's an action-oriented program. There's no chapter in here called into wondering or into thinking or into knowledge or into pondering. None of it's in here. There is a program of action that, if followed and practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and use and enable me to become happily and usefully whole. That's what I'm after, you know? I want to be the guy that when I leave my house, my children are like, I can't wait till he comes home. I want to be that guy, you know? Not the guy that leaves and they're like, well, I don't know if he's ever going to come back, you know? Because that was me. Yeah, I think that was it. Thanks.
I am tickled that there's a couple spots in our literature, and I'm just pleased that they put this in here. Most of us have been unwilling to admit. Then there's another spot in there's the solution where it says, where is it? I have to pull it up real quick. I'm like the guy with the red string and like the, like, look at the board. That's how my mind works. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling our pride. Okay, that's two spots. And then in the 12 and 12, in the first step, it says, who wishes to admit complete defeat? Practically no one. Thank you for putting that in there. They knew we were coming, okay? They had to put a couple of spots to, like, acknowledge, like, we know you're new. We know you don't like it. It's okay. So when I was new, I was antisocial. I think I had gone feral. I'd forgotten how to have like a human conversation. And so my sponsor and she's hysterical, and lovely. And she called me Angry Anna to my face and introduced me to everyone that I refused to talk to as, Angry Anna for the first 2 years of my sobriety. And on my second anniversary, she gave me a card that said, Dear Angry Anna, and she crossed out angry, and I just became Anna, and I was so excited about it. And I stopped having to introduce myself as Angry Anna. Anyway, so she liked to point this out to me, honey, like most of us have been unwilling to admit. And so she's like, you don't have to be happy about it. So I love that Travis brought this up. You don't have to like it. You know, you can complain all you want. You still have to do it. And so she had me look up the word concede. And it is, and I have it written here, get you a sponsor who has a master's in reading specialty. Okay. Cause that's why I tabs and color coding. Admit something is true after denying it. So we learned that we had to admit it, even if we've denied it for a long time. And actually really helped me, that even if I was kicking, screaming and kicking, digging my heels in, that I had to admit to me, who needs to know that I'm an alcoholic? I do. In my innermost self, the whole shebang, the phenomenon of craving, the mental obsession, the whole thing. And that there's three aspects to that. This thing is chronic. It is never going to go away. And for me, the part that I had really been fighting and that I was furious about when I came in is that it was progressive. Like I said, I could admit that I was powerless over alcohol. Fine. I put a drink in my body. We know what happens. If I could just manage the consequences, if I could just keep it here, I don't care that I'm an alcoholic. That I went around saying that for a long time. I don't care. Just leave me alone. Let me do me. You stay over there. I got this. I was very independent, self-reliant, hate you, don't care. You know, just lay me alone. antisocial. But that last couple sentences, over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. And I have written in the margin, like any terminal illness, you know, and it was like, I could not keep the progression where I wanted it. And so it just got worse and worse. And like was being said, the buzz got smaller and smaller. And the worst day, and I don't know what day it was. I kind of wish I did. Somewhere in that last year binge where I didn't take a sober drink, it stopped working. And that was the most terrifying aspect of my disease, is when I stopped getting the effect. And I felt everything, the depression, the panic, the anxiety, the madness. And I couldn't stop. I had, the choice was gone. I just around the clock, and no matter how much I drank, I felt it all. And it was like, now what? This has been my solution since I first drank at 11. Now what? And, you know, so to concede to myself that like, this thing's going to kill me and it's not going to feel good. I was one of those who's like, I don't care if I die young, you know, live fast, leave a cute corpse, whatever. But if it's going to feel like this, I thought if I, you know, died with a smile on my face type of thing, no, this is hell. You know, so suddenly my tune changed. You know, so that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, I like to throw some vocab at you, that suddenly clicked. It stopped working. And I am so grateful. I think that was a gift from my higher power that it stopped working. And I think about it sometimes. I was like, God, like for the alcoholics that are still out there, and it's still working for them, like it breaks my heart. My prayer is that it stops working for them so that they get here quicker. And so the delusion, right, that we could be like other people has to be smashed. You know, like I wanted to be, I knew I wasn't. You know, there was, I couldn't camouflage myself. I'll let your sponsor make you look that up in a dictionary. Go ahead.
Thank y'all. All right, I'm gonna mash these last two little ones together, and then y'all have like a couple minutes each. Sound good? Sweet. All right, on page 41, as soon as I regained my ability to think, I carefully went over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time, I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. Now I remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment on I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. And then the last piece, page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Travis.
Yeah. So let's recap. I'm sick bodily and mentally. When I take a drink, I don't have the off switch, and I continue to drink until I'm either stopped, physically stopped, or I fall asleep, I guess. And I'm coming to do it again. But why do I do it again? Because it centers in my mind. It's going to lead me back to the drink. So, like, I love how what Anna said in the beginning. You know, if my physical craving for alcohol was the only problem, then we would have a one-step program. It would just be, don't drink. Alcohol, you know, detox centers would be kicking out winners. But the problem centers in my mind. And here's another thing. If it was just my mental obsession, then I would just drink the way I want to when I drink. Let that sit in for a while. Think about it. You know, I would just drink the way I want to. I just wouldn't have too many. I would get a couple, feel kind of nice, get the little buzz going, and I'd be good. But I don't have that power to say no or to not do it because I don't have what it takes. Someone has to turn the air back on in here, you know? I need the sense of ease and comfort. That's what I'm after. And what I've found here and much more is working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has provided me with that. I'm comfortable and I'm sober. I've been comfortable and I've been sober. I've never been both at the same time. Yeah. And that's what I've found here in Alcoholics Anonymous and doing this work with you guys. Thanks.
There's a solution. So we read page 24 when we talked about the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink, and we don't have that defense. So here on the last page of More About Alcoholism, once more, just in case you missed it, we really want to hammer it home. We've spent 43 pages plus the doctor's opinion on step one. We want you to really know what's up before we get into step two, which is the next chapter, Weak Gnostics. The only defense is going to come from a higher power, a power greater than your alcoholism, greater than you. But on that page 25 in there is a solution. It talks about, hey, you know, sneak peek, there is a solution. It's going to be this higher power. And there's this line, says he, a higher power, has commenced to accomplish those things for us, which we could never do by ourselves. What's that? Giving you a defense against that first drink. And it's begun to do that for you, you know, just, and it talks just the willingness to be like, okay, well, maybe, You know, I'm broken and defeated and desperate enough to say after 43 pages of you telling me how hopeless I am. Okay, just maybe, you know, just opening my mind a little bit to say, like, I'm willing to consider that if, you know, this brain can't fix this brain and neither can yours for me. You know, when we read, you know, if you go to other meetings, they read how it works at the beginning, the ABCs, right at the end, no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. Not my mom, not a doctor. And that includes me. I can't relieve myself of alcoholism, you know, and that means I'm pretty screwed. Look at me censoring my language. good job. You know, so something bigger than me. And, you know, I may not like that at first, but even just that little opening of the door is enough to start. You know, to commence, to begin doing for me enough for today to not drink. You know, and that talks about it in Weak Gnostics, which apparently y'all will get into next week. Look at that segue. Okay.
All right. Thank y'all so much. That is awesome, y'all. All right. We're going to pass the seventh tradition. Sign up for email on our website, simpleactions.net. Read the self-support green card. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
My name is Kirk. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
This Saturday is going to be a over at Bayside. Presbyterian Church.
In the directions workshop.
Then the two of us will provide it.
Thank you. Anybody else? I have one. This home group right here, Simple Actions, but not right here in this room. About a month from now, September 16th, we're going to be doing a Zoom workshop. It's going to be on effective sponsorship. It's going to be at 7 p.m. It'll be a speaker and a Q&A. If y'all have been to any of our Zoom things, it's kind of like Ask It Basket. You can put some questions in to ask the speaker, and the speaker will answer the questions after they do a little bit of talk on the subject. So it's always great. And we do this over Zoom. It's about an hour and a half. So you're not locked down too long. Don't worry. And you can just like eat your dinner while this meeting's happening. That's an issue for you. That's going to be on. I'll say it again. Effective sponsorship. Yes. And that's going to be Chris R. from Ingram, Texas. It's going to be the speaker for that. And the Zoom meeting ID on the Tidewater Intergroup website for this group is the ID you will log into. And there are beautiful flyers right there to your right on that table. They look like this, nice and yellow. Please grab some, take them to your groups. It's on September 16th.
I'm going to try this second time. So it's three pillars of correction. It's from 10 to 2. It is at Bayside Presbyterian Church. That's, there's a corrections volunteer panel, two keynote speakers, a bit of a discussion. Most of the panelists are going to be available. It's on Saturday, 10 to 10.
Awesome. Thank you. Anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sweet. All right. Point out that literature is available. That's me pointing it out. It's right there on that table that also has those lovely flyers. There's another event that we're having later on, which I won't announce yet because it's too early, but there's flyers for that that you should take over there also. And if you need a book, see a home group member, we'll figure it out. If you are interested in joining this home group or are in, I already said that. Cool. Sweet. Awesome. Sponsorship question. That's where I got mixed up. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can that's probably not provided and stay well away from the church doors. So that means stomp it out and throw it in the trash can, please. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. I don't know if I've said simpleactions.net enough, but that is the web URL. You can find anything you need. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship. The meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella right up Colonial Avenue. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel again. And please, after the Lord's Prayer, feel free to come up here and thank them. Gary's going to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
I'm Gary. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Gary.
The vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
We have a nice way of closing. Moment of silence, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. But I have the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.